Hello, everyone, and welcome to another environmental justice episode of Virginia Interfaith with Virginia Interfaith Live with VICPP's partner organization, Virginia Interfaith Power and Light. My name is Leah Jones. I'm Virginia Interfaith Power and Light's Faith Community Outreach Coordinator, and I'm here today with my coworker, Cadess.
Hi, everyone. My name is Cadess. I am the Communications and Educations Coordinator for Virginia Interfaith Power and Light, and I'm glad to be here today.
So as this long year comes to a close, we would like to look forward to the new year and think about the changes that we would like to see, especially as we approach the 2021 General Assembly in January. At VIPL, this year we are advocating for various environmental justice issues, including energy burden, modernizing transportation, as well as the human right to water. Today, on this episode of Environmental Justice Now, we would like to talk about Earth's universal solvent, the most important resource to all living things, water. As many of us use water every day without an issue, it is easy to forget that on a global scale, having clean water is actually a privilege.
Not only is water a privilege, it is also sacred. Water is a gift from Earth and necessary for survival of all of life. As people of faith, we are stewards of creation and protectors of the resources of the Earth. And part of that is protecting and advocating for water. Water is used across all faiths and spiritual practices for various ceremonies and rituals. Faith communities can contribute to the work for clean water and sanitation for all, to build stronger alliances between different sectors, and to build a stronger coalition for concrete action together. For instance, in 2018, when Cape Town, South Africa was facing day zero as in describing the day municipal water supplies would largely be switched off and residents would have to wait in line to access clean water, faith communities gathered together and spoke up about the injustices to water and the injustices to communities that are facing water and inadequate access to water. Did you know, according to the United Nations, worldwide, 1 in 3 people do not have access to safe drinking water. And by 2025, 2/3 of the world's population will run short of fresh drinking water. Though that statistic may seem far removed from here locally in Virginia, the human right to water is an issue globally, including domestically here in Virginia. Thanks for joining us today as we take a bit of a deeper dive into the human right to water as an environmental justice issue. The issue of water quality and access is a justice issue. So what we do and say here today is to educate and call on all of you to speak up for water and environmental justice now.
I would like to start off the show just by asking our listeners, Facebook, Twitter, and StreamYard watchers a simple question. How many times did you use water today? Let's think. How much water have I used today? You know, well, I woke up, I used the bathroom, had some tea, brushed my teeth, took a shower, had some water with my breakfast, used water to make my breakfast, rinsed off dishes, you know, just going through my usual routine, my morning routine. And even though this sounds mundane, you know, normal activity that we all do, this water definitely adds up. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the average person can use about 80 to 100 gallons of water per day. With climate change, freshwater resources around the world are threatened as rivers, lakes, and other sources are physically drying up or are being bought up by private entities. This means that in many cases all over the world, the public can become displaced or casted out from using their own water sources. If the effects of climate change continue to worsen, instances of drought and environmental degradation will increase, only making the global water shortage even harder to ignore.
The effects of the global water shortage are also being felt here in America and here locally in Virginia, where communities are facing water shutoffs in a global pandemic. Water access is decreasing nationwide as natural aquifers and freshwater resources are drying up. This forces the price of water to rise, leaving many communities under stress. Not to mention, a lot of American water infrastructure is old and needs to be replaced. Old and rusty pipes are the main source of lead pollution, which is a very real issue for multiple Virginian households. Protecting and declaring water as a basic right becomes more important when we look at the fact that the majority of households in 60 of Virginia's 95 counties rely on private wells. In total, there are more than 1 million households in Virginia using private wells. Though water is easy to take for granted, it is important to remember that out of all of the water that exists on this planet, only about 1% of it can be used as clean drinkable water. Water is a precious resource that is not infinitely abundant and can actually be exhausted. And today we're here to talk about it.
So what does the commodification of water mean? Water is a natural resource that we all inherently have access to, just like the ocean we sail on or go fishing in, or simply the air we breathe. These resources are termed common pool resources, or CPRs for short, or the commons for short. In our world, we see that these natural resources, if possible, are made into market commodities for groups to turn a profit. The commodification of water directly refers to turning water into a product to sell and benefit from at the public's expense. Water privatization is a very similar and connected concept which allows corporations to gain control of public water systems and utilities through buying what we call water rights. Going a bit deeper, in the case of water being privately owned and becoming a commodity, especially with freshwater sources here in the United States, corporations can buy land that comes with the water rights that I just mentioned. For example, say I work for a huge corporation and we buy this huge estate that happens to have a natural aquifer. This means that basically after my purchase, I now have the water rights to this aquifer. This means that I can almost do whatever I want with the water that comes from this aquifer. I could maybe start selling water bottles, even if that means denying access to those who need it. I could then take these water bottles and establish prices for this water that are not affordable for the general public. And in many cases, this is exactly what happens in the United States and across the globe, making access to clean, affordable water a huge challenge. So let's just talk a little bit about the history of the commodification of water and water privatization. So when we conceptualize it, going back to the dawn of civilization and humankind, we know that water was not always privatized and traded on the world market. So when did the commodification of water begin? When did water stop being seen as a public good and shaped into a tradable commodity instead? The idea of water privatization that has really gained a lot of traction globally in the 20th century actually initially stemmed from wanting to protect the environment. As water scarcity rose, global agencies saw that public entities were not doing an adequate job of regulating water systems and were actually exhausting resources and contributing to environmental degradation through poor regulation. These private entities were meant to come in and aid in healthy regulation and allocation of water resources in municipalities, thinking that with regulation, the rate of water scarcity could decrease, environmental degradation would also decrease. But as time progressed and the global market was searching for new stimulants and streams of revenue, water piqued interest and was seen as a great option. Now, this is where we begin to see an attitude shift in private ownership for environmental and societal benefit to an attitude of seeing water as a tradable and increasingly profitable commodity. So water is seen as a good investment all over the world. As rates of water scarcity continue to rise, the economic value of water also continues to rise, pushing us into this, you know, sad feedback loop of rewarding water privatization while the number of communities displaced and abandoned by this continue to grow. Though the commodification of water is a huge environmental giant to tackle, I would like to take the time right now to highlight a city close to home here in Virginia. In 2018, Baltimore, Maryland passed a ban on water privatization. This was a necessary win as low-income communities of Baltimore that have historically dealt with water injustices over generations of residents affected by lead-filled water infrastructure, as well as job loss and higher bills from private corporations that took charge of their water utilities. After passing this ban on privatization, this means that no corporate private entity can control and or operate their water utilities. This is a great example of what local government can do, especially because Maryland is only a hop, skip, and a jump away from those of us in Virginia hoping to one day pass something similar. Cadesta will mention a bit more about Baltimore later, but first we'll watch this TED Talk talking about water scarcity.
You might have heard that we're running out of fresh water. This might sound strange to you because if you live in a place where water flows freely from the tap or shower at any time, it sure doesn't seem like a big deal. It's just there, right? Wrong. The only obvious thing about fresh water is how much we need it. Because it's essential to life, we need to think about it carefully. Right now, at this very moment, some people, women and girls in particular, walk hours and miles per day to get fresh water. And even then, it may not be clean. Every 15 seconds, a child dies due to waterborne diseases. This is tragic. The most compelling reasons to think about fresh water therefore have to do with what we might call the global common good. This is not something we normally think about, but it means recognizing how much fresh water matters for the flourishing of human and non-human life on Earth, now and in the future. How do we think about something as local as our faucets and as global as fresh water? Is there a connection between them? Many people assume that fresh water shortages are due to individual wastefulness, running the water while you brush your teeth, for example, or taking really long showers. Most of us assume, therefore, that water shortages can be fixed by improving our personal habits, taking shorter showers, or turning off the water while we brush our teeth. But global fresh water scarcity neither starts nor ends in your shower. Globally, domestic use of fresh water accounts for only 8% of consumption. 8%! Compare that to the 70% that goes to agriculture and the 22% that goes to industrial uses. Now, hold up. You're not off the hook. Individual habits are still part of the puzzle. You should still cultivate water virtue in your daily life. Turn off the tap when you brush your teeth. But still, it's true. Taking shorter showers won't solve global problems, which is too bad. It would be much more straightforward and easier if virtuous individual actions could do the trick. You'd just stand there for 30 seconds less and you'd be done with that irksome planet-saving task for the day. Well, that's not so much the case. Agricultural and industrial patterns of water use need serious attention. How do our societies value water, distribute it, subsidize its use in agriculture, incentivize its consumption, or pollution? These are all questions that stem from how we think about fresh water's value. Is it an economic commodity? A human right? A public good. Nobel Prize winners, global water justice activists, transnational institutions like the United Nations, and even the Catholic Church are at work on the issue. But it's tricky, too, because the business of water became very profitable in the 20th century. And profit is not the same thing as the common good. We need to figure out how to value fresh water as a public good, something that's vital for human and non-human life now and in the future. Now that's a virtuous collective task that goes far beyond your shower.
across the globe, there are multiple growing instances of water scarcity. As you can see on this map, just a disclaimer, this is a map from 2007. So as we are in 2020 and far above a decade beyond this map, you have to understand the levels are much more in dire situations than this map portrays. But as you can see on this map, the very harsh red show places in the world where there's economic water scarcity. That does not mean there's shortage of water supply, but it does mean people do not have the economic means to have access to water. And as you can see, those are mostly in the global south. So there's this global environmental injustice happening with water. And in the blue, in the very light blue, you can see those are places where there is adequate access for water. However, this is, again, a source from 2007, and many aquifers are drying up, especially in instances for North America and looking at the United States specifically. So folks all over the world are in dire situation for access to water, physical water scarcity, where water resources are drying up and diminishing, do not have the capacity to remain a valuable resource for things like drinkable water, sanitation, agriculture, and et cetera. And this map especially does a great job of displaying the economic water scarcity, meaning that the water supply, again, is there, physically there, but it's not accessible because of the public is unable to afford the water. So this kind of brings the issue into environmental injustice. Also, looking at the map globally, the biggest contributors to climate change, as we know, are large developed nations like the United States, China, and the European Union. Smaller, as you know, the term would be developing countries, usually are filled with people of color, feel the growing negative effects of the climate crisis the most while contributing the least. And as this map shows, that issue of injustice is reflected in water, as most global South nations are in the red zone, meaning their economic water scarcity is at a high percentage. And because of that, we see a lot of climate refugees. There are a lot of folks uprooting and leaving their communities to settle in places that are much fitted for them when it comes to water access. And there's a growing climate refugee movement happening today in the 20th century, as a lot of farmers move across borders for access to water and to be able to live properly. And specifically looking at here in the U.S., water pollution and contamination in low-income and Black and Brown communities is a major issue. Places like Flint, Newark, New Jersey, the Richmond Public Schools, Warren, Pennsylvania, have dealt with a much aggressive lead contamination in their drinking water. Communities in Baltimore, Cleveland, and Philadelphia have lead poisoning that has spanned over generations, and the rate of elevated tests over the last decade was 40 to 50% in those communities, meaning that not only is one generation affected by lead contamination, this issue goes over multiple generations and it stays within that community for a longer time. And this is an issue, again, for communities that are low income, brown, and mostly Black. And so we really have to address the environmental injustice aspect of water as a human right. And this issue also extends beyond the places I've mentioned. Excessive lead levels have been found in almost 2,000 water systems across all 50 states. And this was found by a USA Today investigative study. And next, Leah will talk about what it means to introduce water as a human right for all.
So, water is a human right. As water is essential for life and maintaining good health, the reasons you think are clear and obvious why every human deserves the right to clean water. Water is used for agriculture, industry, and the list of household reasons is so extensive, it's not worth mentioning. In 2010, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution that recognized water and sanitation as a basic human right. Though this resolution passed a decade ago, the human right to water remains challenged by privatization efforts that often claim to help municipalities with water infrastructure and regulation, but in fact do the opposite. In this chaotic year of 2020, the pandemic has been another massive reminder of how important water truly is. Privatization of water has led to bill rate increases, low water quality, and lack of access to water and corruption, to say the least. At such a critical time, when COVID-19 cases are steadily going up here in the United States, access to clean water is necessary for maintaining good health. Without water, it is impossible to maintain healthy practices and good physical health. Things like washing my hands, properly disinfecting, or just drinking water to be hydrated all become much more challenging without easy, affordable access to water. For all of these reasons, a policy goal for us in 2021 is for Virginia General Assembly to adopt a resolution recognizing water as a human right for all Virginians. We have a long-range, multi-year policy goal of protecting Virginians from water privatization, ensuring that it remains accessible, affordable, and potable for all Virginians.
As Leah mentioned briefly, the realities of the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic have exacerbated and amplified the critical importance of water as a quality of life issue. In some cases, access to fresh water may be the difference between sickness and health, or life and death. Virginians across the state have been and continue to be locked out of equitable water sources due to affordability challenges. The United Nations standards suggest that the total expenditure on water and sanitation services together with any needed alternative source of clean water should not exceed 3 to 5% of household income. Across the globe, especially here in the United States, where there are tons of antiquated pipe infrastructure that's failing apart in older cities, frequently these cities are predominantly lower income and communities of color that don't always have the funding to fix and update older water systems, leaving very limited options. Larger corporations and other private entities flock to these municipalities, claiming they can help those cities that are in debt by paying for renovation costs. In return, local governments hand over their water rights, now making water commercially owned by private companies rather than a resource for purely for the public. And an example of this is happening currently right now in Petersburg, Virginia, where many African-American communities are facing water shutoffs right now during a very stressful pandemic. And another issue here in Virginia is water quality, and mostly water quality related to industrial use pollution. I wanted to talk a little bit about water pollution from power plants, specifically here in Virginia, amplifying the communities that are fighting fossil fuel infrastructure and protecting our waterways. So giving a little background, power plants are the biggest sources of water pollution in the country today. Power plants use water for cooling, and they use up to 1 billion gallons each day, as this water is, after the water is used for cooling, this water is discharged back into our waterways, our rivers, and our oceans, where pollution occurs. And power plants in Virginia are being proposed currently and being, extended, and even though we have referendum saying that a lot of power plants have to be closed by 2045 here in Virginia, most industry folks are still asking power plants to be extended in Charles City County. And we still see new power plants being proposed in Portsmouth and Norfolk. And even currently, Southwest Virginia and Mountain Valley Pipeline is still infringing on our waterways in the Appalachian area. So we have to be really we have to be really aware of what's going on here and locally when it comes to water pollution, whether it be from industrial use or even our own individual actions. But when it comes to individual, when it comes to industry pollution, we really have to make sure we pay attention to power plants and making sure we protect communities and uplift communities that are protecting our water and our clean air by standing up against very aggressive industrial use of our waters. And, you know, I also mentioned the Mountain Valley Pipeline. Pipelines also exacerbate the issue of water pollution by using in this term we call fracking. And fracking is used to kind of extract gas from, you know, from the ground. And natural gas is not technically natural because they use a combination of multiple really toxic chemicals and water to frack the gas from under the ground. And anywhere between 1.5 million and 60 million gallons of water may be used to frack a single well. And this is according to the U.S. Geological Survey. So we have to be really careful in understanding where and how we're using our water resources and protecting the water resources that we have here in Virginia. And with that, I would like to thank you all for tuning in. And we have reached the question portion of our show. So if any of you will have any question for us, feel free to please to put it as a comment in the live.
It says here, what are the next steps for clean water everywhere? I think at least, I don't know about everywhere, but I think it's best to start, you know, locally. So you want the human right to water in Virginia, call your local representative, show them that you care, you know, bug them about it. Recognize, like Kadesh said, prioritize it. Recognize that water that we use is literally in everything, as we drink it, it's for the food that we eat. We literally will not have no food without water. We won't have beer. We won't have wine, you know? It is life. Water is life. And it is so, that means so much. So the best thing to do about wanting to see the human rights to water pass in Virginia is to call your local representatives and bug them about it. Okay, the next question we have here is, what can I do as a Virginian to influence policy?
That's a great question, since we're entering, you know, a very hectic virtual General Assembly session in 2021. I think, you know, because of the pandemic, everything is virtual. So one of the things that I would kind of suggest is organizing a day where you can get together with your within your own community, whether it be, you know, with your congregation or just even friends and family, to be able to you know, strategize on your demands for your local legislator, right? And then after that, you know, make a point person to be able to be that outreach person who will make sure that demand is, you know, make sure that demand has been heard within the delegate, whether it be emailing that the delegates, calling them. That's a lot of the work that we've been doing as we have been gearing up to GA 2021, is just making sure that they know our names, they see our faces, even virtually, right? and just having that collective action is super important. And if that doesn't exist, you know, tap into the local organizations that are doing this work. Virginia Center for Public Policy, VIPL, VCN, a lot of our coalition partners who are doing a lot of great work for policy to protect our waters.
Something else that people can do right now to get involved and learn more is to sign up for A Day for All People. This is an annual event hosted by Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy and VIPL, where we'll be talking about water as a human right again at a workshop, along with various other issues, including energy efficiency. So please sign up for that and check out our agenda and itinerary for a day for all people, and that is in January. But registration is open right now, so please sign up. Our next question is, also a day for all people, I just remembered, there will be opportunities for lobbying with your legislators. So just what Cadess was literally just saying, a day for all people, you will have an opportunity to do that and really make noise about the things you care about. So please come through. Our next question, are there regulations that can help make fracking safer? I think that fracking in itself is inherently dangerous, and there is not really any way to make it safer. It should be just rid of in general, and maybe transition now, not maybe, but yes, transition to renewable sources. It's time to leave pipelines, it's time to leave fracking, natural gas in the past, and move towards renewables. The rest of the world is doing it, why can't we? All right, well, next question is, how do we as people of faith have a special responsibility to think of water as sacred?
I think that's actually something that we touched on at the beginning of our conversation. I mentioned a little bit about how, you know, water is a gift from Earth and necessary for survival. But a little bit more than that, I think we have to emphasize how water is seen as sacred across all faith and spiritual practices. You know, in the Muslim faith, before you pray and before you enter a mosque, you always have to be clean. Water is used, you know, to wash your face and your hands and your feet before you walk into a place of worship. In the Christian faith, we have holy water, right? And that's all across the different denominations. So this understanding, how the text and scripture and the different multiple faiths describe the connection to water, describe the connection that we have to water, is really crucial in mobilizing people of faith to care for water. Because not only is it essential in how we practice our faith, right, it's also essential in the ways that we have taught to be able to care for Earth. And that is, you know, water is a part of that. Water covers, you know, beyond, I think, 70%, correct me if I'm wrong, but 70% of the Earth. So, you know, and Leah, if you have anything to add.
Yeah, definitely. I think even on a grander scale of things, when you think about water as an environmental justice issue, a justice issue, water is a justice issue, and faith communities should strive to fight for justice. That is literally the work that we strive to do, care for Earth, because we want to care not only as stewards for the earth, but we want to care for our neighbor and protect the earth that we all live on, so that people don't have to flee from their homes because they don't have access to clean drinking water or can't afford it. Or even here locally in our own communities, they're being poisoned by lead because of old pipes. So I think the faith community is inherent in, you know, all justice issues, and water is definitely a huge part of that in conjunction with all of the reasons that Cadess just gave. So definitely. Yes, please sign up at vaipl.org to show your support. Sign up for Day for All People. Thank you all for tuning in. On that note, I think that we can bring the show to a close and say thank you once again. I hope you all learned something today. And once again, please remember that VIPL believes that the right to water is important for all Virginians, and we will continue to make this a priority for us as we continue to grow. So when you want to take action, sign up for Day for All People, get together with your friends, your family, call your legislators, connect with your representatives, and do what you can to make water a human right. Thank you. See you next episode.